ads for the box tops. What do you get when you send in a box top? A genuine gabardine potato chip.
I'm just going to let it sink in. Okay, it sunk. That was interesting. That was music and talk, I guess, from Ken Nordine, in case anyone wishes to write to the appropriate authorities. No free speech radio news tonight. In case you didn't figure that out, that was not a different version of it. But the show that will come your way, despite all the trials and tribulations that have been placed in front of it, that program is Off the Wall. Oh, you're not gonna do this to me. And a good evening to everybody. Sorry for the delay. Just trying to troubleshoot the problem here. Yes, it's another Macintosh, and it's kind of gotten the better of us here at the radio station. That's why Free Speech Radio News did not air tonight, because this stupid Mac over here didn't cooperate. Yeah, now you know. The news comes to you through a Macintosh, which is why sometimes the news doesn't come to you. Yeah, I'm still on my anti-Mac kick, okay? I've had a better week than last week. Things have started to work a little better, but it's still so frustrating, you know? Computers, technology, humans, too. Don't forget humans. But we're going to get through it together, and and share our various problems and trials and tribulations and things like that. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock, and well, I've done the unthinkable. I've forgotten to bring in this week's Cheech and Chong tribute. And that means we won't be hearing from Tommy Chong this week as he languishes in prison. I'm sorry. I meant to bring it in. I don't know what happened. Well, you know, I'm also kind of sick, so maybe that's got something to do with it. Since yesterday, or was it the day before you? I don't know what day it was, actually. The days kind of merge together when you get sick, and it's been a day or two, that much I know. Yesterday was sneezing day, today is coughing day, and who knows what tomorrow will bring. Let's try not to speculate. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that happens when the temperature does these, you know, bouncing things where it's really cold one night, then it's really warm the next day, and everybody just sort of gets fed up. And it doesn't happen very often. Like, well, not to me. And when it does, I never stop. I never stay inside and not do anything. I stay inside for a while, but, you know, I go out and I do radio shows, and I infect entire radio stations with whatever it is I have. No point pushing the cough button, because I'll just be leaning on it all night, and we don't want that, do we? Plus, it's controlled by the Macintosh, too, so it probably wouldn't work. Well, it's been a very interesting week. It continues to be a very interesting week. Interesting day in the news. We're not going to talk about this today, all right? We're not going to talk about the election in California, or the recall vote, whatever you want to call the thing, the Schwarzenegger rise to power. Except, you know, whenever you see that guy, with that, you know, straight as a line smile of his, you know, and his muscle head there, you know, and his big stocky body, and the fact that he can probably kill everybody that he's talking to. When you see that, doesn't it just creep you out even a little bit? And it's very likely this guy's going to be the governor within 24 hours. Well, he won't take office, I guess, but I don't know when you take office when you get elected on a recall. But it's a whole crazy thing over there. It's another way, and I'm not picking on the Republicans here, except to say that for the second time, they're stealing an election. Now, I'm sure the Democrats would do the same thing. In fact, I'm sure they're going to do the same thing. They're going to probably try to recall the guy as soon as he gets elected. But come on already. You can go into the polling place today, and 49% of the people can say that they don't want a recall. And 30% of the people can say that they want Arnold Schwarzenegger, and those people would win. Yeah, less people. Less people will win again because of the way it's set up. It's such a bizarre system. It really is. I don't know why they didn't do it this way. I don't know why the governor just didn't say, okay, fine. I'm just going to put my name on the ballot, and if you think I'm doing a good job, vote for me. That way, if he gets more votes, he wins. But this way, if he gets more votes, he has to get above 50% to win. Because the first thing that has to happen is this referendum has to be defeated. And if the referendum isn't defeated, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many people voted for the referendum if they don't get 50%. So Arnold Schwarzenegger can get 2% as long as everybody else gets below that. So I don't understand why Governor Davis didn't just say, okay, you know, I'm going to add my name to the list as well. I don't think his name is on there, is it? I don't know. Maybe somebody in California can let us know this. What a big, incredible waste of time. And it's not democracy in action. It's democracy falling apart. The very fact that you can have such a small number of people overturn an election and put their own person in, it's a mockery. That's how I look at it. I've heard it described that way by quite a few people. Unbelievable. But that's all they're talking about on the mainstream news today. So I'm going to try to avoid it as much as possible. But I will forever remember the way I feel today as the day that Arnold Schwarzenegger rose to power. Of course, I'm assuming that he's going to rise to power. I always, fear for the worst. What's so bad about Arnold Schwarzenegger? Oh, come on. You know, the guy, fine. He's a good Terminator guy. You know, he's a good actor. All that kind of thing. He's got no experience. Hello? No experience at all. The only debate he's been in was a debate where they gave him the questions beforehand. What kind of a debate is that? That's not a debate. How many tests did you take in school where you got the question beforehand? and then showed up and took the test and acted like, oh, I didn't know that question was going to be on there. Well, let me give you my spur-of-the-moment reply. It's just silly. I mean, you know, put these people in a room and let the audience ask them questions and don't tell them what they're going to be. I mean, they probably gave them the answers, too. Who knows? Who knows? Now, imagine this. Okay, this is the final thing I'm going to say about this, which is pretty good for something I said I wasn't going to talk about at all. Imagine Governor Davis. Yeah, he looks really dorky, I know. But he is the governor, after all. They did elect him. And it's not like he had no experience. They re-elected him. But imagine that guy with his white hair and goofy look being the Terminator. Yeah, this is the guy in Terminator 4. Coming to save the Earth from another sequel. Yeah, it would suck, wouldn't it? It would really be bad. It would be awful. Why? Because this guy's not an actor. Now, flip it around and have Schwarzenegger running the state. Equally bad. In a totally different way. But it's all the way out in California. Who really cares? Oh, yes. Well, who knows? Maybe a lot of people will show up and stop this thing. Before it gets out of hand. All right. We're not going to make the same mistake we made last week. We're going to start with the pictures a lot earlier. And yes, we do have pictures this week, and they're pretty interesting pictures. But first, I don't have the real news for you because another computer failed and is refusing to print the news. That's great. We're in the computer age here. So all the equipment that used to, you know, be analog, manual-type equipment that didn't work has now been transposed into digital equipment that doesn't work. And it just feels so high-tech, you know, when you press a button and nothing happens. That's what it's all about. All right. Let's see. We've had a lot of good feedback from the first 2 weeks of picture-taking, which maybe we'll get to a little later. Let's take a look at what's going on in the world now. Roy Horn. Ho-ho. This is Siegfried and Roy. You've heard about this, I imagine. If you haven't been in a coma, you must know that the White Tiger went berserk on Friday. Something's in the air, by the way. I don't know about you, but did you notice that the White Tiger attacked Roy Horn in Las Vegas Friday night? And at around the same time, or definitely in the same evening, another tiger, a 300-pound Bengali tiger in the Bronx, yes. he was living in an apartment building in the Bronx. What's so surprising about that? He decided to go on a mauling spree, too. And I don't mean going to the mall. I mean slashing and biting and whatever else came to mind. And that's what led to his owner. Well, it's interesting. Whenever you read the news, you hear all different versions. One version had him calling the cops. I don't know what he was going to do with the cops coming to his apartment, arrest the tiger. But then the other version had him going to the hospital, and then they figured it wasn't what he said it was. I think he said it was a dog or something like that. And then he fled to Philadelphia, but he's since been found. And the tiger is now residing in Ohio, from what I heard. But anyway, so you had these two tigers attacking people on the same night. And, well, I mean, it's not the same level, really, but on Friday night, my cat attacked me, too. I mean, I was, you know, just walking in the house, and he was on the chair and just kind of, like, leaped through the air, and it was obviously well planned out. He was waiting for me. And I've talked to at least three other people who have told of similar instances with their cats and one panther, and it just makes you kind of wonder, what's going on there? You know, what kind of communication is, you know, in the animal kingdom? This could be a well-executed plot that was hopefully quelled, but you never know. You never know. But the Homeland Security level remains at yellow, despite what the cats are up to. We're going to be keeping an eye on this. If you have a cat, keep an eye on them. Anyway, Roy Horn, last we checked, is still in critical condition. Should have seen the show while I had the chance, shouldn't I? I guess we all should have. People went to Las Vegas. You certainly saw the signs everywhere. Siegfried and Roy and the stupid white tiger. Oh, well. And here's the other thing. You may have heard, if you heard the first stories in the news about this, that this was a brand new tiger. This tiger was performing for the first time. He just completely flipped out. And now, well, it's different. As he had done thousands of times, Horan sauntered onto the stage with 7-year-old Montecor, a white tiger who has appeared in the show since he was 6 months old. And this is the reason why he got two different stories. He told the capacity crowd of 1,503 that it was the cat's stage debut, which is a little white tiger lie, according to the Associated Press, and I don't even understand what that means. Maybe it's to make people afraid that this is the first time this tiger is here, and maybe he's going to flip out or something? Well, you know, it would have worked either way. Anyway, Montecor was told to lie down. He balked and grabbed Horan's arm in his mouth. Excuse me. Horan struck Montecor with his microphone, trying to get him to loosen his grip. And that sure didn't work. Montecor then grabbed Horan by his throat, dragging him backstage, where handlers subdued the tiger by spraying him with a fire extinguisher. And that's where the story lies. And one of the things, and I don't know if this is just a rumor or something like that, but as the guy was being taken away in the ambulance with massive blood loss, he was able to say one thing, and that's, don't kill the tiger. Which, if he said, was pretty gosh darn cool, but I don't know if he actually said that. You got to realize, you know, if you're playing with wild animals, they are wild animals, and this kind of thing is entirely possible. Doesn't matter how well you know a white tiger, something can piss them off, you know. Who knows what it was that angered this guy, you know, on this particular day. Maybe the fact that he keeps doing the same thing thousands of times, one day after another. I know if I was a tiger, I'd say, enough already. Good Lord, there's other things to do in life. So, let's all hope he pulls through. I don't know if the Siegfried and Roy show is going to pull through, and maybe people will think a little bit before they start playing with wild animals. And maybe not keep them in their apartments. Good God, what was that guy thinking? He had a crocodile in there, too. And again, it's great watching the news media completely throw the story in all different directions. It was a 300-pound Bengali tiger, from what I understand. Those are the kinds with the stripes. And I heard it on Fox. It was a 600-pound tiger and an alligator. I mean, it's a big difference between an alligator and a crocodile. It wasn't even a crocodile. It was a crocodilian. You know what a crocodilian? It's something that looks like a crocodile but isn't a crocodile. But it certainly is not an alligator. But they can't even get that right. Okay, other big news this week. Well, Israel. Oh, boy, they're on the rampage here. They threw some bombs into Syria. Actually, I guess they delivered them in person. It's a very interesting story. We're going to have a bit more to say about this throughout the hour, I guess. I was online, as I usually am, and occasionally I look over at CNN.com, see what's on the news. And, well, the top story, this was on October 5th, 5:42 a.m. Yes, I know, I keep awful hours, but that's the time I happen to be up. And it's related to the whole Macintosh ordeal I've been going through. I had a great schedule when I got back from Europe. It was fantastic. I was going to sleep at night, something I couldn't do before I left. But I was away for 6 weeks. Every night I went to sleep at a good time, woke up at a good time, no problem sleeping at all, and I carried it through when I got home. It was great. It was like therapy. And then the Macintosh problems began, and I started staying up later and later and later. And last week was the first time I saw dawn before I was going to sleep. And, it was kind of sad. So I got to sort of somehow flip my schedule around again. Hopefully not have to go back to Europe to get back into the swing of things. Anyway, so I was up at 5:42 in the morning, and the big story, recall rhetoric heats up. There's a picture of Arnold and Gray Davis, both looking really goofy. And then to the right-hand side, where they have more top stories, Israel attacks training camp in Syria, IDF says. And I did one of those, you know, double takes like cartoon characters do. You know, where your eyes pop out of your head. And, wait a minute. Hold on a second here. Israel just attacked Syria? That's pretty heavy duty. You know, that's serious stuff. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it wasn't on the TV. I couldn't believe it wasn't, you know, a top story. How could Schwarzenegger beat out Israel attacking a foreign country? How could they do that? Well, within the next hour, of course, somebody at CNN figured out, hey, you know, this is a pretty important story, and they moved it to the top story where it's been pretty much ever since. But it's just fun to watch these things evolve, and I decided to have a little fun with this. I wandered around the net and started seeing how other news agencies were covering this, and I discovered something pretty interesting, how incredibly biased some of the reporting is. I'm not even talking about the news story. I'm just talking about the headlines. And you can see this, too, with virtually any story, especially those of a political bent or foreign policy bent. Just examine the way they say certain things. Now, look at how CNN did it. Israel attacks terror camp in Syria, IDF says. Now, what does that mean? That means that the IDF is claiming that Israel has attacked a terror camp, which is what the story is, right? They're the ones who told everybody. The Israeli forces are the ones who told people, hey, we just did this. All right. Wandered over to MSNBC, where the headline read, Israel strikes terror base in Syria. Well, that's pretty different, isn't it? All of a sudden, the quote is gone, and it becomes fact. Now, you may believe it's fact. I may believe it's fact. It may eventually be proven as fact, but right now, at this moment, it's one person, one country against another. Syria is saying it wasn't a terror camp. Israel is saying it is. Let's continue. That's interesting, too. The MSNBC story was actually an Associated Press story. Let me read you the first paragraph. The Israeli army attacked an Islamic Jihad training base in Syria in retaliation for a suicide bombing at a Haifa restaurant that killed 19 people. That's pretty biased right there, isn't it? They attacked an Islamic Jihad training base in Syria. Are you sure? Do you have the evidence? Ah, but there's more. The army said in a statement Sunday. You see, you need that. You need that little extra phrase there to say where you got that information from. So what MSNBC did was they stuck their own headline on top of that, and they decided to just omit the part that, well, this is one side. There's another side to the story. They just took that out. Reads better this way. BBC, yes, what do you think BBC said? Israel hits Palestinian, quote, camp, unquote, in Syria. So by doing that, they're questioning if this is a camp or not. They're quoting somebody as saying this was a camp. And their first paragraph is a little bit cautious, too. Israeli forces attack a Palestinian base inside Syria in response to Saturday's suicide bombing that killed 19 people. Now, whether or not there was actually a base there, I guess that's something that still hasn't been proven, too. But they're not calling it a terror camp. They're not calling it an Islamic Jihad camp. However, in the story, they say that that's what Israel is claiming, which is what the story is. Fox News. Oh, yes, Fox News. Well, what'd you expect? I mean, really. Israel attacks Islamic Jihad base. Warplane strikes Syrian training camp in retaliation for suicide bombing. Nothing attributing that to anybody. It's just fact. Fair and balanced fact. Let's see. And ABC News, same basic thing. Israel hits Islamic Jihad base in Syria. Actually, it reads almost word for word from Fox. CBS News, they didn't have the story. They just didn't have the story at all. Vegas vigil for Roy Horn is what they had. And nowhere in their site could you find anything. And the New York Times, finally. Israel said to attack Islamic Jihad base in Syria. Now, that's how you report a story. We heard this. We're reporting it. This is how we heard it. And then you see how the story evolves. It's fascinating, really. So that's how the story began. And, of course, now it's gotten pretty darn interesting. No one knows what's going to happen next. But, you know, the thing is, and people seem to think this is something unusual and something new. It's not. Maybe it's before a lot of people's time who are listening. But years ago, it wasn't that long ago, but years ago, Israel attacked Iraq. They attacked a nuclear power station in Iraq. They bombed it to smithereens. Does anybody remember that? Am I the only one? Yeah, they said it was a threat to them. So they went over there and they bombed it, and that was the end of that. But the world was outraged. I mean, you know, when you go in and bomb a country, it's generally something that's not a good thing. And we did a little piece here at WUSB. We used to do comedy back then. And it was basically a news report saying that Israel had just bombed the Shoreham nuclear power plant here in Long Island because they said that was a threat to them as well. So, you know, the whole thing has been around for quite a long time. It's interesting to watch and kind of dangerous at the same time. But the thing that really got me, and this was almost funny the way it happened. Did anybody catch this on the news when the United Nations Security Council was meeting in emergency session on Sunday? Well, first of all, let's take a look at when this happened. This happened on the eve of Yom Kippur, which was yesterday, which I accidentally fasted for because I was sick and I just didn't feel like eating anything. But on the eve of Yom Kippur, the 30th anniversary of the war with Syria. Well, that's a big coincidence, isn't it? The 30th anniversary of the war with Syria, Israel, for old time's sake, decides to bomb Syria. I mean, that's how it looks to the rest of the world, doesn't it? And then at the UN Security Council hearing, did you hear the Israeli spokesman? It's too bad we had to have this meeting on the eve of Yom Kippur, the most holy night for us. As if the UN had decided that, oh, let's do this on Yom Kippur just to piss Israel off. You know, you guys kind of bombed somebody first, which is why we're having the meeting, and you did it on Yom Kippur, the eve of Yom Kippur, so the whole thing was really silly. I think, you know, there's a lot here that isn't being addressed. Why now? Why there? How come specifics weren't laid out well in advance? Usual questions like that. I mean, this symbolism here, and I think a lot of it is being inspired by George W. When Israel decided to kick Yasser Arafat out, when that proclamation was made, do you know what day that was made? Did you pay attention to what day that was made? September 11th. Think that's a coincidence? A lot of little games going on here. Anyway, so that's how a news story developed this week, and I thought it was pretty interesting just to see how it developed, and, of course, to continue watching it and see where it goes. But now, we're going to go to our pictures, and we're going to hopefully have time to talk about them, because they're interesting pictures this week, not that the last weeks weren't, but interesting for a different way. We're going to step out of our linear path and hop around a little bit, based on a theme. And kind of related to what we were just talking about. And we have a new sound this week, and this one's going to work, I understand. That's the sound for this week. All right. That wasn't the sound last week? All right. Well, that's the sound for this week. And whenever you hear that sound... All right, enough. Whenever you hear that sound, which you're not going to hear now, that's the signal for you to go to the next picture. Now, where are these pictures, you may ask? They are at our website. And if you're listening on the internet, you already know where that is because you're listening to us somehow. That site is at www.2600.com/off-the-wall. And if you look around in there, you will see pictures for the show of October 7th. And the beauty of this is that if you're driving around in your car and you're screaming and crying because you can't look at the pictures while you're driving, fear not, because you can always download the show at your convenience and look at the pictures then. They will always be there. Okay, so let's go to the October 7th page of our curriculum here. I feel like a high school teacher. And we look at... Actually, I don't know if you need a beep for the first one. I think that's unnecessary. I'm getting kind of sick of the noise before we even start. Okay, but if you look at the first picture, which is, in fact, the first picture of October 7th. Anybody have trouble doing that? Okay, I was able to do it, no problem. So if I can do it, you can do it. If you look carefully, that's we're in Germany now, and that's a picture of the ICE train. It's actually a picture of two ICE trains merging together. They do that. They travel all across Germany and into other countries, and sometimes two trains ride together. Like, let's say you're in a train from Berlin to Amsterdam. Well, along the way, maybe the train from Berlin to Frankfurt will latch onto your train and separate at some point. And that's why it's very important to be in the right car, because some cars go in different places. It's true. I'm not making this up, and this is proof right here. You know, these two trains are linked together. And it's amazing watching this happen. You know, it's like a mating ritual of some sort. You don't see humans. You don't see people yelling and screaming and saying, okay, move back now, Harry, you know. It just does it silently, quietly, and efficiently. Pretty freaky. Ah, okay, our second picture. This is what the every train station, pretty much every train station in Europe has something like this. It's a schedule, a master schedule that you can look at on the track. And if you look at that, do we have a closer view of that? Yes, we do. You'll see that the time is listed. And next to that, actually right next to the time, you'll see the train number. That's there as well. Then a list of all the cities that the train is going to. And next to this, and Penn Station fans, pay close attention to this. To the right is, guess what? The track number. That's right. You can find out the track number for a train days before it arrives. They have it worked out so that the train is always on the right track, the same track. And all you have to do, and it's amazing. You know, you don't have to know the language or anything. When I had to go from Prague to Amsterdam, I had to take 5 trains in one afternoon. And when you get off, the first thing you do is go to this yellow board, find the exact time that your train is leaving, because you have that on your schedule, and look for the track number and go to that track. It's that simple. Penn Station, you sit around and you wait until they, you know, change the board, and then everybody runs, the stampede to the train. But there are people who know about it because they're already in the train, so there's a whole big thing going on there. I don't see how hard it is to make the train show up on the same track and tell people in advance. This is a picture of the train to Warsaw, which I took. It's called the Berlin-Warsaw Express, and Warsaw, of course, in Polish, in Poland, is spelled W-A-R-S-Z-A-W-A. And to me, that train was always a bit of a mystery, because I had seen it a couple of times. I had gone to Germany many times, never gone east of Berlin. So that was sort of the symbolic step into the unknown zone. And it was pretty cool. PKP is the Polish Railways. You see those letters on the bottom of the train. And whenever you go into a country, there's a different train company, obviously, running things. So you just have to kind of get used to it. But that's a train that goes from Berlin to Warsaw. It's a couple of them, I think, every day that that leave that station. This, in the same station, which I believe is Ostbahnhof, one of the eastern stations in Berlin, that's what's known as the S-Bahn. S-Bahn is kind of like a suburban type of train, sort of like a subway, but also sort of like the LIRR, but kind of in between. And they run all over the place. They run all over Berlin. There's the U-Bahn, too. The U-Bahn runs underground. The S-Bahn runs overground for the most part. And the S-Bahn also just goes further out. So it's kind of like a commuter train. This is in the T-Mobile store, which is actually Deutsche Telekom, the German phone company. They had this advertisement, which I thought was kind of interesting, for ISDN. Yes, they still use ISDN in Germany, and they call it T-ISDN. So that was rather interesting. They're building a brand new train station in the middle of Berlin, as if they don't have enough already. They're putting together this one, and you know, since the last time I was there, which was last December, until the time I was there in July and August, they constructed all of this. And I imagine this is for the 2006 World Cup. They want to have a centralized station in Berlin. Because when Berlin was split, there was a western station and there was an eastern station. There's Berlin Zoo and Ostbahnhof. And I think they want to build something in the middle of that. I don't know what they're going to do with the other two, but it's another big train station in Berlin. And this is the Soviet War Monument near Brandenburg Gate, a tribute to Russian soldiers who fought and died in World War II. And interestingly enough, it's on the western side of what used to be the Berlin Wall. And here's a picture of the Brandenburg Gate, which used to be right in the middle of the Berlin Wall. If anyone was in Berlin 1989 and before, and of course after when the wall came up in the early 60s, you couldn't reach this particular structure. That was the center of Germany's one-time capital, and now, of course, the capital again. And you can walk through it now, but back then you couldn't walk through it, so it's very symbolic of I guess, a new era. And, of course, to the right there is my favorite car, the smart car. Someone else is driving one of those. And, boy, it's fun to see those. This is the sidewalk outside Berlin, outside Brandenburg Gate, actually. Those bricks on the pavement are symbolic of where the wall used to stand. And those bricks, I think, go throughout the entire city, wherever the wall was. So if you're looking for something historic, that's where to look. There are some pieces of the wall still standing, but not a whole lot. You have to really search for them. I have yet to find them myself. Okay, now we kind of move a little bit into a different theme of our pictures. Okay, well, I guess that would be an appropriate time to turn to the next picture. What I spent a lot of time doing, and I mentioned this when I first got back, I take a very keen interest in looking back at the past in certain places, especially when history is in danger of being forgotten. And one of the things that I find absolutely abhorrent that people are on the verge of forgetting is what happened during World War II to millions of people in Eastern Europe and Western Europe. And, of course, we have all kinds of memorials. We have all kinds of tributes. We have a sense here in this country of just how horrible it was. We have some sense. We don't have enough of a sense, I don't think. So I set out wherever I went to try and find those pieces of history. And this is the first one. This actually was part of Warsaw. I spent 2 days in Warsaw searching for the remnants of the ghetto wall. Now, early in the occupation of Warsaw, the Nazis built this wall around the entire neighborhood. They confined the Jews into the ghetto, and the Nazis basically liquidated the entire area in 1943. That was after an uprising. One of far too few uprisings, I'm sorry, that took place. And basically, I'm reading from the guidebook here, one of the guidebooks I took with me. A small section of the original ghetto wall still stands between two apartment buildings on a particular street, in a particular area. I asked all over the place. I got maps. I went to tourist agencies. And nobody could help me find this. It was really pretty sad that this wasn't something that was the centerpiece. Okay, now, you see, this is the placard on the only synagogue, the only remaining synagogue in Warsaw. Only one. Now, Poland, I can check my figures here. Poland used to have, let's see, actually, I don't think I have Poland, but they had a very large Jewish population. I mean, easily over, okay, here we go. 3 million Jews in Poland. 3 million Jews in Poland. And today, 3,500. 3,500, from 3 million to 3,500. I don't think people realize this. I don't think it hits people that the population has been so incredibly eliminated. And yes, you can say a lot of people moved to Israel, but they should have repopulated that area. In fact, I still think that should be done. I still think people should bring those numbers back up. Because when something horrible happens to a population, letting that stand is never the answer. And doing something else as a result, that may not be the answer either. Anyway, so this is the synagogue I went to, and I even asked them for directions to the ghetto wall. In fact, there's a nice picture of the synagogue. It's well maintained, but there just aren't very many people left to go to it. And the person there didn't know where it was either. They thought they did. They gave me directions, and I went to where the person told me to go, and it was nowhere near where the place was supposed to be. One thing I did find in another part of town was this tribute here to children during the occupation. You see, there's a little kid here wearing an army helmet and holding a machine gun. And that really makes you think about what the resistance was all about. Strange parallel, too, to the child soldiers you see in Africa and various other parts of the world. Of course, there's a guy taking a picture of it. There's always people taking pictures of those things. But eventually, after 2 days of wandering around, yes, I finally found it by looking in all different guidebooks and going on the internet. That, my friends, is the picture of the Warsaw Ghetto Wall, the one last remaining piece of it. It's between two existing apartment buildings where people are living and shouting and, you know, walking around and doing all the things people do when they live in apartment buildings. And just at the bottom there is this wall connecting them, and that's the historic wall. Of course, nobody was there. Nobody was interested. Nobody knew where it was. And yet that is the one remaining symbol left of that ghetto. I mean, there are plaques, there are all kinds of, you know, memorials in other places, but this is actually a piece of it. And this is something from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, where they basically say they took two bricks out of the wall and brought it over to Washington back in 1989, I believe, and that's affixed to the wall. And if you look there, you can see people do leave candles in a little gap inside the wall. Now, this is a very interesting memorial as well. Also in Poland. This was called the Umschlagplatz. Umschlagplatz, I'm sorry. Okay, that was the railway platform where Nazis gathered 300,000 Jews for transport to death camps. And there's a monument in Polish, Hebrew, and Yiddish inside this this particular monument. There were no signs of train tracks anywhere, so this is a line that's long gone. It doesn't even look like a train platform anymore. That's the view from across the street. I guess you could see that being somewhat of a train platform. A very small one, and a side view. And I don't know if anybody can read the language that's there. If so, please send us a translation, because we'd certainly like to see it. Moving on to Kaliningrad, which was it still is part of Russia. That's their World War II monument, and as you can see, there it's in typical Soviet style. People just looking angry and defiant and heroic and all that kind of thing. And that's pretty much all you're able to find over there. Now things get interesting. Now we're in Latvia, and Latvia, of course, being one of the Baltic republics, the middle one, in case you're keeping track. There is something that I found to be absolutely amazing over there, and I strongly recommend seeing this. And forgive me if I pronounce it wrong. It's the Salaspils Memorial, Salaspils. Salaspils is how I'm going to pronounce it anyway. It basically marks the remains of the Kurtenhof concentration camp. And reading from the book here, it was primarily a place of transit to larger death camps from 1941. The inscription over the entrance reads, "Here the innocent walked the way of death." How many unfinished words, how many unlived years were cut short by a bullet? And basically, this is the train station that you're supposed to get off at. A few weeks ago, I told you the story of how I missed the stop because they only have the train station name at the very front, and I had to actually come back to this station. It was funny at the other station. I believe it was called Dole. I went to the train person and said Darzini, and she had no idea what I was talking about. I said Darzini. I want to buy a ticket to Darzini, one stop up. You know, no idea. And then finally, the light turns on above her head, and she says, "Ah, Darzini." So yeah, you pronounce one thing wrong. You know, they put emphasis on the wrong syllable, and nobody knows what you're talking about. So that's the train station that you're supposed to get off at. And I got to tell you, it's pretty spooky. Nobody was there at this train station, not a single soul. That sign that you see in the woods there is supposed to be the sign that leads you to the Silas Peel Memorial. And as you can see, there's nothing on the sign, nothing at all. Fortunately, I had a very good guidebook with me that told me exactly what to do. It said to walk through the woods, which there was plenty of there, and it was really kind of scary. Nothing but trees everywhere. When you think of the death that took place in that area, it really is a very sobering kind of a thought. And the book told me to continue until I saw a path, which you can see coming up in the distance, and then to continue down the paved path, which is what this is, through the woods, about a kilometer, maybe 2 kilometers. And then eventually you see signs that actually make sense. This is a rusted-out sign. To the Silas Peel's memorials, actually, because there's more than one. And this is the path to the actual memorial, which turns into a dirt path. But the silence, except for a passing train every few minutes, the silence just is simply incredible. Sad in one way, because you're the only person there in the middle of the forest. But also, it really brings you into conflict with your thoughts, you know, direct confrontation with the horrors that went on there and what could possibly have been taking place. And this is one of the signs at the entrance, which I believe had the inscription that that I read. And you have little memorials where flowers are placed. I don't know who places the flowers. I think it's someone's job to put flowers on all these memorials. And this is one of them. You can see just a few very forlorn pieces of some kind of plant put on top of there. No words, just a piece of marble. And a lot of it's overgrown. Here's a sidewalk that stretches out. For those just joining us, we're on picture number 32, by the way. The sidewalk that stretches out and grass is overgrowing it everywhere, so it's really not maintained all that well, which isn't surprising if so many people aren't there. This is a very strange building at the center of the memorial. You can see that there's a staircase that leads into it. Again, no words, no signs, just kind of an understanding that that's the path that you have to follow. You must go on that staircase. And if you go on that staircase, you see a door ahead of you that's kind of a, looks like a prison door. Big metallic gates. And it's open, just a crack for you to walk into. Very unusual type of memorial here, with no tour guides, no screaming babies, just silence. And this sound in the background. Sound of just a beat. Kind of the same pace as a heartbeat. And it resonates throughout the entire place. And you go into the building. And sorry, did I not hit the right button? There we go. You go into the building and you see a long stairway ahead of you. It's kind of a hallway that goes inside this building. And there's light up on top. And just nothing but that sound. And that's the view as you look back after you've walked up the staircase. Now, as you look out on the field, you see these statues that are standing there. There are four clusters of sculptures. One is called Motherhood, Solidarity, The Humiliated, and The Unbroken. And according to this guidebook, they watch over the way of the suffering, the circular path connecting barrack foundations in which flowers now grow. And a black box emits a low ticking, like the pulse of a beating heart. And as you look on the inside, you see pictures on the wall of drawings of what the camp must have looked like back in the Nazi era. Gallows, people suffering in all kinds of different ways. Women being separated from their children. Nazi officers just doing whatever it is that they want to these people. People suffering in the cold, in the rain, adverse weather conditions. And as you can see, all these pictures are lined up next to another staircase, which when you go outside, you find yourself on the field with the statues. Very strange-looking statues, strange expressions, Soviet-era type things. And there's the Solidarity statue, which, you know, to me, I thought was not really appropriate for something that's supposed to be remembering all these people who died miserable deaths. I mean, worker solidarity is one thing, but this is about survival. This is about, you know, getting through it and rebuilding. This is the motherhood statue. You see a mother sheltering her two children. And this is where people put flowers throughout. And a view of the statues with the building in the background. And all throughout is this incredible birch forest that just surrounds the entire area and is really unbelievably strange, because you don't see very many birch forests to start with. And if anybody can translate this, I'd sure appreciate it. Or that. It's in Cyrillic. And these are the an inscription from 1944. And that is not a Star of David. That's, I believe that's a Soviet star. I did not see a single reference to Jews or that particular persecution, which I guess is in Soviet style. And now we move to our final place of interest. And that's in the country of Belarus, the city of Minsk, where, again, I had to search the entire day to find the memorial. This memorial remembers the 5,000 Jews who were shot and buried by the Nazis in 1942. And after walking virtually all day, I was able to track it down. And boy, I got to tell you, this was really creepy. Because you just see all these statues of people going down next to a staircase. Yeah. And the people are obviously suffering quite a bit. As you take a look at a long shot, you'll see how many of them there are. It's just an incredible sight. Just maybe 20, 25 people just gathered in a line with children. A closer view from the side, and a view from the top. And our last picture, the memorial, which was defaced by a swastika and not entirely wiped clean. Maybe that's for the best. Maybe that's something that people need to be reminded of, that this kind of thing still exists to this day. And the reason I showed these three today was because they all had a common theme to them. And that's that I was the only person there. Nobody else was around. In fact, I even got some dirty looks from people as I was like walking around. I don't know, maybe I was just being paranoid. But you go to a place like this, you look at this, you feel this, you try to sense it, what happened. What happened in so many places and how the population was decimated. And then you look at today's events. And maybe you have a bit more of an understanding why things happen the way they do. Why things are important to some people. And I'm not trying to justify any of the crap that's going on over there, because believe me, there's a lot of crap going on all different sides, and I could spend hours just talking about that. But I think people need to see this. People need to see all kinds of things like that. I only saw a small fraction of what's out there, but I spent an awful lot of time trying to find it. And I think, you know, once you do that, you just have more of a sense that this really happened, that this could easily happen again. And I know there's all kinds of horrible things happening. But there was something very different about this. This was the attempted extermination of an entire people, and it was done very well. They knew what they were doing. And imagine what they could do with technology today. Imagine that same will of hatred and the desire to completely wipe out a race. Imagine that applied today. We see plenty of wars, we see plenty of massacres, and this was probably the scariest one, because, well, one of the main reasons is because people are forgetting about it, not realizing the importance. So, yeah, there's a lot more I want to say on the subject, but these are the pictures. These are the pictures I took of those particular areas. Let me fade down the beating heart as it is in Latvia. And I think you have a better understanding of the plight of other people when you study what has happened to them. I'm not saying you should just study one particular horror that happened or one particular group of people or anything like that, but I think so many people today aren't. So many people are skipping over things and just not hearing things because it's inconvenient to them. You see this on the left, you see this on the right, and it's bad no matter where it comes from. Well, an hour certainly isn't enough time to get into this. I guess we'll continue this discussion, maybe take some phone calls next week. You can write with your opinions, your outrage, your agreement, whatever it is you feel like, otw@2600.com. And I believe Josie's up next with the blues. So stay tuned for that, especially those of you in foreign parts of the world. Well, foreign to us anyway. And listen to USB all day long. See you next week.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.